from the Sky News Centre at 3. The VAT rise is the wrong tax at the wrong time, according to the Labour leader, Ed Miliband. He's warned the increase to 20% tomorrow will cost the average family almost £400 a year and put a quarter of a million jobs at risk. These people at the Bluewater Shopping Centre in Kent say they've been trying to beat the VAT rise.
Come to get a coat, about £200. I suppose we've saved about £5 with the VAT rise.
We bought a household carpet just to beat the VAT, but apart from that, that's our big buy of the year.
The military has flown food and emergency supplies to flood-hit Queensland in Australia. 200,000 people across 22 towns and cities have been affected by the disaster. Police investigating the murder of Joanna Yates will hold a news conference later this afternoon. The 25-year-old's body was found on Christmas Day after she disappeared following a night out in Bristol. Patrols in the Clifton area of the city where the landscape architect lived have been increased. The 66 people who were killed at the Ibrox disaster in Glasgow have been remembered at a memorial service. Yesterday marked the 40th anniversary of the tragedy, which happened during an Old Firm clash between Rangers and Celtic. One of Britain's best-loved actors, Pete Postlethwaite, has died at the age of 64. He starred in numerous hit movies, including The Usual Suspects, Romeo and Juliet, and Brassed Off. In 1993, he was nominated for an Oscar for In the Name of the Father, about the wrongful convictions of the so-called Guildford Four. The film was based on Jerry Conlon's autobiography.
I think he was always grateful for getting a part of my father in The Name of the Father. I think it opened so many doors for him and give the world an opportunity to see what a fine actor he really was.
And Take That had the biggest selling album of 2010. The official charts company has revealed Progress, the band's first album with Robbie Williams for 15 years, sold 1.84 million copies. That's the latest. I'm Kelly Withers.
CFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
Ah, yeah, the mashup to the weekend show is back. I'm DJ Spun Gold and you can join me every Friday at 10 o'clock for an hour of having it tunes from drum and bass to techno, hip hop to ragga, jumpstarting your weekend right here on BCFM's 93.2.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
Welcome back to my conversation with Colin Force. Colin is in his 70s and he's a former steam train driver and trade unionist from Yatton. His book is called A Life on the Railway. That is Colin Force's Remembering a World of Work That Has Gone Forever, published in 2009 and written by Faith Moulin. That's M-O-U-L-I-N. We'll be hearing more from Colin in a moment after this.
Thank you.
from 1964. That's Henry Mancini with from the famous film A Shot in the Dark. Now it's time to go back to my conversation with former steam train driver and trade unionist Colin Force. I'm Tony Gosling, and Colin is in his 70s and lives in Yatton.
I got passed as a past fireman. In other words, I could apply for a driver's vacancy. Well, me and the missus, we had ambitions to go to Plymouth. The idea was to make a boarding house. But of course, they were making men redundant at Plymouth. In fact, my understanding is that there was over 100,000 rowingmen lost their job for beaching. Nobody have ever suffered that much. No, but the miners, nobody have ever suffered that number, 100,000. 2,385 stations were closed. And God knows how many signal boxes, well, the signal boxes was going to follow anyway, because that's modernisation. When they took away the steam from Yatton, because of the redundancy arrangements, although there was still steam going to on the Cheddar Valley line, there was no point in me staying, so I elected to go back to Bristol, which was my original depot, and I done it through an agreement that where the new service started from, that's where I would go. So I went back to Bristol. Well, then I went into the links, which was still steam for most of them, and that was to, I think, 1963. And then I applied for a driver's vacancy from to go up Barrow Road in Bristol, and I stayed there then until 1965, when they closed it and went back to Bristol Temple Meads, Bath Road. Well, then I went in the pilot link, shunting. That was Maligo coach sidings, Bristol Temple Meads. There was the three shifts there, two ends, Bristol West End and Bristol East End. So that was two pilots, 24 hours a day, and then up to Doctor Days, which was the big coach sidings. So that was another three. That was the pilot link. Most of the drivers there again were still the cripple drivers, but there they started to put us in the same links.
It is.
From 1962, that was Skeeter Davis with The End of the World. And now back to my conversations with former steam train driver and trade unionist Colin Force.
Well, there's Wapping, down Princes Street, Wapping, where you come down through, you could go from Temple Meads, High Level as it was called, down through the Redcliffe Tunnel, which went under Redcliffe Church, out then out past the General Hospital, across the swing bridge, and then in across the first part of the River Avon, and then you come across Prince's Street, where the new Industrial Museum is, and Wapping was a yard. From Wapping, then you could go back across the Aston Gate swing bridge and back up to Bristol West Depot or back to Temple Meads again. That's the Wapping. But then the other one, which is now built over, but the part of the building, the goods shed, was at Cannon's Marsh. That's the one that run along the Hot Wells Road and then went past the big gasworks, which has now been modernised and one thing and another, and then that went into Cannon's Marsh, where that yard serviced the Irish boats. That's when Bristol had a fantastic dock system. But that died. The boats got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it's all container traffic now. So, of course, it's picked up somewhere else, Southampton, Felixstowe, and all sorts of places. The rest of the railway, now, Bristol. Bristol actually had a fantastic suburban service, the Clifton Down Line. The Clifton Down Line would start from Clifton Bridge, which is down past Ashton Gate, down by the Porter's Head line. That was the Porter's Head line. There was coach sidings there, and the train services which there was up to Clifton, down to Avonmouth, and then you could go back out to Severn Beach, back up to Patchway, back out down again, down Filton, down Orfield, Ashley Hill, Stapleton Road, Lawrence Hill, Bristol Temple Meads, and the Fry's Angel trains wouldn't go to Temple Meads, would whip round the corner to St Anne's and out to Keynsham. Porter's Head. Initially, Porter's Head, Temple Meads. That was Port Breed Pill, Clifton Bridge, Ashton Gate, Parsons Street, Bedminster, and Bristol. Do that. And go round, and then go round Lawrence Hill, up the hill to Montpelier, Clifton Down, down to Seamill, Sherhampton and Avonmouth, and go back round again. Up to Embry, and then back to Filton. There was no Bristol Parkway in those days, because that was Stoke Gifford Shunting Yards. Then eventually, the timetablers done Porter's Head to Bath Green Park. So you could go down to Porter's Head, stay on the same train, come back up, Temple Meads, at the Mangusfield Bank, I'm not sure the stations out there, Fish Ponds or Staple Hill, and then I think it was Mangusfield, and then you could go down then to, we're Bitten now, and on to Bath Midland. So that was the service they had. The Clifton Down Line was a train roughly every 20 minutes, in both ways. The first one in the morning, and I said about Dr. Days, the last job that the 10 o'clock shunter at night would do, and in actual fact, the train crew, the driver and fireman, would push down into number 15 platform, which is Brunel's old station, still open. Two trains, carriages, would push them down, 15 coaches. The first lot that went in was the Weymouth train, and the second lot, all coupled up together, was the first train, 5:35, from Temple Meads to Avonmouth, double-headed. And that's two engines, and one engine would carry on going round Embry, and the other one would pick up a set of coaches at Avonmouth that had been there overnight and start a service the other way. Avonmouth, there was two yards at Avonmouth. One was called Royal Edward, which was improved during the war by the Yanks. And then there was the old yard, what was called the old yard. It was run with the LMS and the Middle Region and the Western for the banana traffic. You know, ships come in from Caribbean, as it is, loaded up with bananas, and it was in the wagons and gone. See, You take a place now, Padstow, North Devon, Ilfracombe, Biddeford, Padstow, all the way down there, Perrenporth. You could catch a train at Perrenporth on a Saturday and go to Bristol or go to Reading and London direct from Perrenporth. There ain't no railway down there now. The only bit of railway that's left is St Ives and the Loo Branch. You can't get into St Ives with a car, so you leave it on the station and go in by the train.
Everybody's talking at me, I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stopping still, I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain, going where the weather suits my clothes, banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Northeast winds sailing on summer breeze and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
Harry Nilsson there, and everybody's talking. And now back to my conversation with former steam train driver and trade unionist Colin Force. He's the author of A Life on the Railway. Colin Force is remembering a world of work that has gone forever. And it's actually written by Faith Moulin, that's M-O-U-L-I-N, and published in 2009.
What makes me angry is that the governments... all of a sudden found billions of pounds to give to the private sector to run the railways. They denationalised British Rail and they gave the money, which they would never, ever give British Rail. Edward Heath said to whoever it was, £600 million, which is petty cash as it is today, £600 million to do something with the railway. It wanted investment. And within 6 weeks, that money was withdrawn. That's the government, isn't it? The other thing is that, go back to Mr. Marples in his motorways. Who did they build the motorways for? It wasn't for the private motorist, although he could go on the motorway. What's the biggest complaint today on the motorway? Lorry after lorry after lorry after lorry. How can the post office say that for three drivers from Penzance to Plymouth, one driver. One driver from Plymouth to Bristol, and one driver from Bristol to Paddington on the post office, with the men collecting and sorting the mail inside the train. Now is 10 lorries and 10 drivers from Plymouth to Bristol and 10 from Bristol to wherever. I'm very cynical in the way that civil servants act in their particular ministries, and the Department of Transport, as far as it's concerned, there would be no railway at all in this country. Not Beecham, but there was another man called Selden, I think, who, as far as he was concerned, there would only be one railway line, and that was from London to Scotland.
But don't you think, in a way, the cutting down the railways was a good thing? Because, as you were saying yourself, these trains were running backwards and forwards almost empty. And not only that, because the railways have been cut back, that's one of the reasons these little steam lines exist, like the East Somerset Railway.
Yeah, one has to admit that the trains available in the 1960s were no longer needed, because most people had a little motor car or a motorbike or sidecar. That was the fashion. It was far better for them to get in their car and go. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm definitely not anti-motorist. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I drive my little three-wheeler down to Cornwall once a year when I could go on the train for nothing. But what's the point? I can't go nowhere on the train when I get there. Oh, no. At that time, them particular branch lines, a lot of them, went the same way as the stagecoach. They'd had their day. But the thing is that there is no competition for long distance. That's the secret, even with the freight. That's the biggest problem of all, is that lorries are going from the Midlands, they're going down to the West Country, loaded, and 9 out of 10 of them are coming back empty.
Surely the same was true for the old goods wagons, that they would sometimes come back empty, wouldn't they?
Well, the only wagons that basically would actually come back empty was coal wagons. We used to work a freight train called the Drump Lane. A freight train which left, shall we say, Temple Meads, 9:55 at night, what they called 9:55 West Depot in Hackney. That was down to Newton Abbot. And there was another one at 10:55. That's two. These trains consisted of generally vans, and you name it, it was in there, from dustbins to brushes and parcels. It was ridiculous, really, what actually went in them. But those particular vans, they were vice versa, because all they'd done, they'd probably go down to Penzance and come back with the cauliflowers in. There were trains that, obviously, you can't fill them up every time. Most people that travel, I've noticed it, like Noyatton. The car park in the morning, you go down in the morning, and the car park initially started off with half a dozen. Now there's nearly 200. You go down the road and there's another 100 parked down there because they don't want to pay the £2. So that's good. People are actually, they're using the trains, they're commuting. That's how it should be. I'm not saying that anybody that feels like driving their motor car from the Midlands down to Cornwall and Devon, let them get on with it. I mean, that's all right, because the railway today is not geared up to run summer trains. I mean, they don't run all these specials. Do you know, when I was a fireman, take Friday night, we used to work a train, extra train, sometimes empty stock, which was going to go to Manchester, Liverpool, Preston, for trains to come back down, and we would work a train, say, for instance, the 12 o'clock midnight, Penzance, Manchester to Penzance. The normal one would leave Manchester at midnight, would arrive in Temple Meads at 5:35 in the morning, and then would progress at 6:35 to Penzance. right? Now then, it's summer Saturday peak. There could be another 12 o'clock midnight, which would run 10 minutes before that one. But he would not spend an hour at Temple Meads. Or it could run 10 minutes later, so you could have three parts. Some of the trains that went from Paddington down to the west of England, to Torquay, Paignton, Kingswear, and of course Plymouth, Penzance, they used to run in three or four different parts. The night sleeper used to be doubled, particularly when Harold Wilson, because he used to go down, and the boat would wait for him, go to the Scilly Isles, but he loved it over there. But no, I think the railway got a good future, but what annoys me is that taxpayers not getting the benefit of it. That's what annoys me.
Won't you stop and take a little time out with me? Just take five. Stop your busy day and take the time out to see I'm alive. Though I'm going out of my way just so I can pass by each day, not a single word do we say. It's a pantomime and not a play. Still I know our eyes often meet. I feel tingles down to my feet when your smile that's much too discreet sends me on my way. Wouldn't it be better not to be so polite? You could offer a light. Start a little conversation now, it's all right. Just take five, just take five. Not a single word do we say. It's a pantomime and not a play. Still I know our eyes often meet. I feel tingles down to my feet when your smile that's much too discreet sends me on my way. Wouldn't it be better not to be so polite? You could offer a light. Start a little conversation now, it's all right. Just take five, just take five. Just take five. Just take five. Just take five.
From 1962, that was the Carmen McRae with the Dave Brubeck Quartet and Take Five. Now back to my conversation with former steam train driver and trade unionist Colin Force, who is in his 70s and lives in Yatton. His books are A Life on the Railway, A World of Work That Has Gone Forever, by Faith Moulin, M-O-U-L-I-N, published in 2009. And he's also included in Steaming Through the Cheddar Valley, Recollections of the East Somerset and Cheddar Valley Branch Lines by Derek Phillips, which was published in 2001. So, back to Colin.
The camaraderie between railway workers, there was always a bit of a joke about the man at the back of the train, which was the guard. He had his job to do and he'd done it. If you were lucky, driver and fireman, 99.9 of them, you were mates and you worked together. You become a very small team of two. I was very fortunate. I had lovely drivers except one, and he wasn't a very nice man, not only not to me, but he wasn't a very nice man at all. I only knew Sigelman by name because I worked in the signal box, all right? But otherwise, most Sigelman, when a train went by, they'd wave out to you or whatever. If you stopped at somewhere in the middle of nowhere and they said, got any coal? Give them a bucket of coal, you know, that sort of thing. Of course, the fireman had dealings with the signalman more so than the driver, because if you was going to carry out what was called Rule 55, that's the protection of trains stopped it, detained at a signal. Now, in the old days, before there was track circuiting or telephone communication, when a train was stopped at a signal, blow the whistle, if it didn't pull off within 2 minutes, then the fireman had to walk to the signal box and he present himself to the signalman, and he would carry out what was called Rule 55. And Rule 55 was that you would sign the train registrar's book, that you would blah, 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 train so and so and so and so. You would ask the signalman if the train was protected, and he would show you, right? And then he'd say, there's no need to stay here, mate. Go back on your engine. I'll have the road in a minute. Now, how did that rule come about? Well, many, many years ago, there was this terrible snowstorm, and an engine had banked up a train up an incline, and it's going towards London. Well, the turntable was some distance from the signal box, so they turned the thing and went back down now, and they're going back down the bottom of the bank. But while all that was going on, a train was already going on that section of line. So they had to wait until the signal box ahead said that now that the train is passed, I've seen the tail light, the line is now clear, and then the signalman would be pulled the signal off, all right? He can't do it until he got his electrical set up. Anyway, this particular night, they banked up the train, they turned the train on, engine on the turntable, and the signalman said, go on down to the signal. Well, it got worse and worse and worse, and the signal is, they can't see the signal now. And whatever happened, the story goes that the signalman must have forgot that he had an engine down there. Well, he gave the line clear to the signal box in the rear for the mail, the Irish mail, as it was in their days, and he could pull the signals off. He asked the signal box in advance for the signal, and he never got line clear, all right? So what he now done, instead of slowing the train down, he left these two signals clear so that he would pull the one off and the train driver would drift down to the next one. But because it was snowing, he would stop outside the signal box. Well, he didn't, and he smashed into the one in front. So that's how Rule 55 come about. So communication basically between train crew was firemen and the signalman. Other than that, plate layers, who's just, you know, it's just, hello, all right, wave hand. But we were train crew. I mean, we had some good guards. We had a double ohm turn, what's called a double ohm turn. Laugh. You book on at 2:20 in the morning, and you're going to go to Plymouth with a parcel train. It takes you 6 hours to get to Plymouth. Sometimes it'll take you 9 hours. Anyway, when you get to Plymouth, they take the engine off of you and you catch a bus and go back to the Lira Lodge. And there you had a bath or a shower and somebody eat or go to bed, do what you like. And then you would work back at night, 11:30, drum to Bristol West Depot. Go to bed about 1:30, get up at 5:30, have a bit to eat, go up the Lira Lynn and have a drink, and then go over and get the engine, and then eventually on your way home. It was just over 24 hours. I used to go out on a motorbike out here, about 10 to 2, and 24 hours later, about 10 to 3, I come back home. And you do that 3 days 1 week and 2 days the other. Always a bit of a laugh, bit of a leg pull. One of the things was with a passenger, we were double manned from Bristol to Paddington, HST. I'd already been down to Taunton on my own, all right? But because we're going to do 125 mile, it was double manned from Bristol to Paddington. And then I would be the other second man from Paddington back to Bristol, and the driver would finish the turn off, go down to Taunton and come back on his own. No problem. Anyway, whilst we're in the mess room at Paddington on number one platform, Because they don't always know your names, but they know where you come from. They'd address you, your depot. So the foreman come in, he said, Bristol, number one, it's me. He said, do us a favour. I said, what's that? He said, will you work a train down now to Bristol? I said, yeah, all right. He said, I'll swap the mates over. It don't make no difference with the pay or nothing like that. He said that it's a class 47 and 8 coaches. He said that Reading, Didcot, Swindon, Chippenham, Bath and Bristol. I said, yeah, all right. Anyway, I finished my food and out I went, and eventually the engine come back. The shunter coppered up. The guard said that 8. He said, don't forget, stop at Didcot, Swindon. I said, yeah, all right. Anyway, off we go. Nice day. Runs into Didcot, got the window down because I'm going to look out and see the guard give right away. And this bloke comes up and starts prodding me with an umbrella. And here too. So I shut the window up. So I leave it to your imagination what happened to the umbrella. And then he opened the door and I was going to thump him one. I thought, well, I better not. Anyway, the foreman on the station come up and he said, what's up then? And this bloke's doing a war dance, saying he ought to have, he paid a ticket to have a HST, not an ordinary train. And the foreman said, you haven't paid any more, any less. This is an extra train. If you choose to get on at Paddington on an extra train, that's entirely up to you. He said, the HST is not running. So I knew what they'd done. They swapped the trains over, see? So my mate ain't going to go to Taunton because they've had a problem, all right? They put the train on a Cardiff. That's what they done. Anyway, he hurt. Anyway, the copper come up, British Transport Police, and he said, what's the matter? So this bloke, I'm going to go at the copper, and I said, never mind what's the matter. I said, look. Well, he said, he do that? I said, yeah. And then he starts on about his umbrella. And I said, well, I put a stop to that. I said, shut the other day. He said, right, sir. Name in the drive. He got fined for sorting a driver. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Harmony, harmony, let's all join.
from 1973, Ray Conniff there in Harmony. And now back to my conversations with former steam train driver and trade unionist Colin Force. Colin's in his 70s, he lives in Yatton, and he's author of a book called A Life on the Railway. Colin remembers a world of work that's gone forever. This was published in 2009 and actually written by Faith Moulin, M-O-U-L-I-N. So back to Colin.
Right then, listen. Monday morning, January the 3rd, 1963, winter time, isn't it? On Boxing Day, approximately 2:30, it started to snow. In my understanding, it was still snowing in March. It was a very, very bad winter, particularly for the southwest of England. Anyway, I'm under what they call controls orders, and they wanted to know, would I work the Wells goods train from Bristol West Depot to Wells? And I said, yes. And he gave me a fireman whose name was Clive Joslin. Well, we go down to West Depot, we couple up, and we got a train, and we got some wagons to put off at Yatton. We got some wagons to put off at Congersbury. That was for the Rinkton branch. And then the rest was actually for Wells, East Somerset. Well, anyway, we'd done all that, and it wasn't too bad. Although it had snowed, it was snowing, it wasn't too bad. And when we was going to the onto the shed, there was a steam engine which was going to be the 7 o'clock Wells to Yatton, and the fireman was on there. And next thing, he jumps off the engine and he's chasing a bloke up the sidings. Well, it turns out that I caught up with my engine, a fireman who had rode his bike from somewhere or other in the snow, and I caught him up with my engine.
He was riding his motorbike along the railway?
Well, yeah, through the wicket gate and going towards the shed, see? Because you couldn't see where the railway line was, basically, and we were just creeping in. He wasn't riding it, he was pushing it. Well, we got the doctor when we caught him, but he was lucky. We didn't do any injuries to him. And the only thing that was wrong with his little bantam motorbike is he broke a wire for the tail light, but he was lucky. Anyway, we come back home then. Well, it carried on, didn't it? It snowed and it snowed. Anyway, when I gets to Bristol Tuesday morning, the control says, will I work the Wells goods then? And the Wells goods, I said, no. No way, I said, I'm sorry. He said, why not? I said, well, he ain't never going to get there. I said, it's snowed up down yet? No. I said, God knows what it's like out on the Cheddar Valley line. All right, he said, well, do us a favour, he said. Will you take the engine down? That was 4-6, whatever it was. Anyway, with Clive Joslin again. Well, when we come down, we stopped at Yatton. I thought, right, we'll have water again with light engine. And what we were going to do, we were going to go and see how far we could get. Right, not with the snowplow. There's no snowplow on my engine. Well, anyway, my mate, who's dead and gone now, come up and he said, I can't get to Congersbury. So the signalman said, don't worry, he said, we'll give you a token, he said, and you can drift round there and see what you can do. So anyway, I thought, I'll ask the signalman for what's called a steam lance, and you could put it on the front of the engine and blow the snow out of the points. So where we get to Congersbury, because the road is set now for the Rinkton branch as per instructions, all right? So if anybody stole a train, they couldn't go to up the Cheddar Valley line, they'd finish going around the Rinkton line, which no harm done. Well, anyway, it took some time for us to clear the points, and meanwhile, Bob had cooked a bit of breakfast for us. So anyway, well, eventually now we're going to go to the next station, Sandbury and Banwell, where the phone goes, and we're told to stay where we are because there's an engine coming down now with a snowplow on. Anyway, fair enough, down he come, and there's this inspector man now, come from Stourbridge. I didn't know him anyway. He said, what you're going to do, he said, we're going to couple up, he said, and we'll go as far as we can, and when we blow the hooter, he said, open up, we'll go through the snow. Anyway, I knew already that the only bad place would be Winscombe. It blew off the platform and it filled it up. Anyway, that's a laugh. Clive was having a little drive and we're going through and he blew up through. So he said, go on, open her up then, Clive. So he opened her up a bit more. Anyway, he said, come in, look at this, he said. And there's a bloke stood on the platform with a bowler out and a briefcase. And all the snow is coming down, looked like a snowman on the advert, Mother's Pride or whatever it was. And he was disgusted. He was waiting for a train, right? Because he was still running on the Chatter Valley line. Well, anyway, when we got to Chatter, the sickleman there, like, shouted out to me, he said, it ain't no good up by the chicken farm, mine. He said, up by the distant, for Draco, he said, it's pretty prick. There was a small bank, and the top of it was a chicken farm. And then it come, the snow come down off the mend, it fill up a chicken farm, and when it done that, it would come down, cross the railway, drop down the next bit, and it covered up a part of the River Axe, a tributary of the River Axe, which is flowing water underneath. Anyway, I says to this bloke, I said, what I'd do if I was you, Governor, when you get before you get to the bridge by the chicken farm, I said, if I was you, I'd stop. We'll unhook and you have a bash on your own, and if you get stuck, we'll come in and put you, oh, no, he said, two engines. You don't argue with them, do you? Anyway.
That was the inspector, was it?
Yeah. Anyway, we went through and bloody wallop, bang, come to a stand. Just like getting a brick wall. Anyway, we come to a stand and he gets off, doesn't he? But he gets off the wrong side. So where does he go? Straight down, and all you could see was his brown gloves and his trilby hat. So we had to dig him out. And we dug him out, and he, oh, you don't know that, he said. I said, well, you didn't listen, did you? I said, now what are we going to do? And it took us 2 hours to unhook that engine. We had to set fire to the coupling to melt the ice. Paraffin rag and set fire to it. Eventually, gonna. Then he said, I want you, go back. I said, yeah, nice and steady. But no, he said, go back as far as you can. I said, yeah. And what happens? The snow piles up because it has snowed and blizzard, piled up behind his tender, and there we are stuck now. So that's why they two engines is apart. Well, the novelty is now wore off, hasn't it? Midday, mine, and this blizzard is blowing, and now he says to my fireman, you've got to walk back to Cheddar with the token to carry out the rule. And I said, no way, mate. He ain't walking back to Cheddar. I'll walk back to Cheddar. No, he won't gonna have that. Anyway, the signalman now that was going to go to Cheddar lived on Draycott Station. And he come and he said, I'll walk back because I'm going to relieve my mate. So he went back with the inspector, not my fireman, and they took the token. So, see, that's carrying out the rule, because you couldn't have two trains in the same section without a token. You mustn't. Anyhow, that's criminal. Well, anyway, it's 4:30 now. It's got dark, but it ain't dark with the snow in the ice. Now, what me and my mate had done, we pulled one of the smoke plate out, built a fire on the smoke plate, filled it up, and we got an igloo now, and we're in there, and we're quite comfortable. But now we got to go and find somebody to eat, haven't we? So we goes out the pub, and we took a shovel, fireman's shovel with us, and a packer shovel, but we couldn't get the phone box. No way could we get in the phone box. It's frozen solid. Anyway, we go in the pub, and she said, I haven't got no food. Got nothing. No, dear. Anyway, we go back now, and we sit back on the engine, and this kid comes up and he said, "Here, my mum said, if she'll cook you a chicken in summer, if you'll give her a bag of coal." So we done a roaring tray with the bags of coal, didn't we? Now then, we slept all night on and off. And the next night, next day, nothing. Several engines have come and had a go because they was running out of water. There's no water column, see, between Yatton and Wells. So they had to watch the water, see. Whilst all this was going on, the farmer that with the chicken farm, he come down and made us a way down and he said, "Oi," he said, "my missus said you better come up here and have something to eat and get warm. You can't stay there no more." Anyway, that was four of us. The driver and fireman on the first one and me and my mate on the second one. Anyway, we walks up. Oh, the house is covered in stuff. And we go in, caps off, and biggest table you'd ever seen. Cups and saucers like soup dishes. Covered with sandwiches and whatnot. And we stood there and she said, "Where's the rest of you?" "Well, there's only four of us." "No, no, no. It just said on the home service that there's 100 men digging you out." Well, that turned out the 100 men was on the S&D. Anyway, we had a sandwich and a cup of tea and a warm and whatnot. And then, anyway, we went back and on the engine. We were all right. I mean, I had oxos in my bag, so I got some water and had oxos and whatnot. Anyway, then we go down midnight. There's this diesel. And he's going backwards and forwards. Well, eventually, I thought, he ain't never going to get... He was pushing the snow up underneath the bridge, see? And it was freezing at the same time. Anyway, I goes down and I'm stood on the rail. And I said to this inspector bloke, I said, "Here, Governor," I said, "how long's the sandboxes been up there? I can't reach them." And he looked and he said, "Where are you stood?" I said, "On the rail." Oh, my God, he said, "He's off the road." And what he was doing... He was riding on the ice. The sandboxes was actually riding on the ice. So that was it, abandoned. There's a gap between the rails and the wheels, all right? And, of course, you don't steer them. It's the rails that steers them. Anyway, the inspector said, "Shut it down, finish." So he made the driver... Well, as it says in the book, he drained the radiators. He shut it down completely. And then they arranged now for the breakdown train to come. Well, first of all, they got an engine to come behind and stop behind this Hi-Mec. And he said, "Us four, three plate layers that had walked from Cheddar, we're all going to go back now and go home." So tender first, in the snow, still snowing, and eventually we get round to Yatton station. I give my fireman the work ticket and said, "Book off what time you get there. I'm going home."
That's Colin Force there talking to me earlier this year about his experiences in the winter of 1963 down on the Strawberry Line. And Colin is the author of A Life on the Railway. Colin Force remembers a world of work that has gone forever, published in 2009 and actually written by Faith Moulin, M-O-U-L-I-N. So let's have the final part of my chat with Colin now.
It was the official opening to be held at Bath Road Shed. I was officially booked on to work as a fireman at 11:35 train to Swindon and work a parcel train back, which generally got lost. In other words, you're going to make a lot of overtime. So 11:35 should be off at 7:35 at night. But 9 times out of 10, it would be 9:35. Sometimes 10 o'clock, because this train come from Leicester. And they had their problems anyway. The roster clerk left a note for me to go into his office. And I goes into his office and he said, "You will present yourself at 9 o'clock next Tuesday." I said, "Yeah." He said, you will be introduced to Mr. Marples. Yet. He said, and then you will take up your book working. So I says, no way. What do you mean, he said? I said, I don't wish to be introduced to Mr. Marples, but I'm very political like that, mate. I said, and as far as I'm concerned, I will book on and do my normal turn of duty, or I will come at 9 o'clock, I will go in the cabin until the foreman gives me a job.
So what was the problem with Mr. Marples then?
Now, come on, mate. Put two and two together. What, after what that merchant had done to the railway? And you want me to shake his hand? More like wring his neck. Anyway, it's a good job I didn't, because when he was introduced to the driver that was on the long hours, the same as me, I was on duty with my mate 37 hours. Huey Arlett was on duty 30 hours. Because I'd come on a bit earlier than him in the morning. And when he Marpus come up to him, he was introduced a driver to him that he was over 30 hours stuck in the snow. And Marpus said, well, he said, you got paid for it. Well, if he'd have said I got paid for it, I'd have smacked him in the nose. But I don't like the tourists. You might as well go home if you don't like it. I don't like them. It was your transport policies. I mean, it was a Tory government. I mean, Tory governments, whether you like it or not, are no good to working people, and you lot now are going to find out tomorrow, isn't it? Or is it today? Thursday, isn't it? You lot's going to find out. Can't hurt me. I'm 77 now. Do what he likes now.
That was Colin Force there from Yatton. He's a former steam train driver and Aslef trade union representative, now in his 70s, as he just said. Colin's books are, there's two of them. First one, A Life on the Railway, Remembering a World of Work That Has Gone Forever. That was published in 2009 and written by Faith Moulin, M-O-U-L-I-N. The other one is called Steaming Through the Cheddar Valley, Recollections of the East Somerset and Cheddar Valley Branch Lines by Derek Phillips. That was published in 2001. And so we finish today with Dolly Parton from 1961, A Coat of Many Colours.
Back through the years I go wandering once again, back to the seasons of my youth. I recall a box of rags that someone gave us, and how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colors, but every piece was small, and I didn't have a coat, and it was away down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, so in every piece with love she made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of. As she sewed, she told a story from the Bible she had read about a coat of many colors Joseph wore, and then she said,
you are listening on BCFM 93.2 FM. It is your voice and it is your choice.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody